Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com. Killer
Bees! ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ooh, what up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank, I'm Branham, it's AJ behind the glass, a Monday edition of the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. No Brian today, he's off again. Off again. Wrong answers only. Where is Brian today? 713-780-3776. So Texans lose. Their season is over. We'll discuss that in great detail. Rockets are playing right now. Not playing great. We'll get into some of the other stuff around the NFL. Mailbag Monday. Busy show on the Killer Bees. I'm curious, Blankers, yours, and the entire Hive as well. Your initial feeling right after this game. You know, Chiefs win by 9. It was a one-possession game really throughout. Texans were in it. They fought hard, old college try. What was your initial immediate reaction?
I think my initial reaction was one of, I don't want to say I was pleased, but I was satisfied that they were in the game. I did feel like it was a combination, not a comedy of errors per se, but there was a combination of their own shortcomings and the help of some of the calls that went against them, and I hate saying that. But that they had a chance. And that's what I had said going into the weekend. I felt like it was going to be a one possession in the fourth quarter and they would have a chance. But I didn't know if that one possession was going to be out of reach, like one possession, like you had said, like maybe it was right on the cusp of being 9 or 10 or whatever. But you look at it and the way that everything played out, I came away from that game going, they were in it. They had a shot. I thought that they competed really well with the supposed best of the AFC to where I started thinking to myself, they're not that far away if they just handle their business in the offseason.
Yeah. I was kind of torn because I hate the whole moral victory thing. Mm-hmm. Like, I hate the, well, you know, they tried really hard. Oh, they, you know, they gave it a good effort. Oh, they were in the game. But they also lost, and their season is also over. So I was really on the fence on how to feel about the Texans. I think where I landed is I appreciate the fight. I don't think they're as good as Kansas City. Top to bottom roster, you look at Mahomes and Stroud, which I thought that the difference between Mahomes and Stroud is pretty vast. Now, Mahomes has some help in the sense that he has arguably the greatest playoff tight end of all time, maybe not even that arguable. He has, in my opinion, the greatest offensive mind in NFL history. Stroud has Nico Collins, and Joe Mixon, and that might be the end of the advantages that C.J. Stroud has on the offensive side. So I think where I landed was I'm content with defeat. I like their effort. I feel like they were more in this fight this year than they were the prior year. And I do feel like they've closed the gap a little bit from where they are and where the top of the AFC is at. So I guess I'm okay with the way that they went out. And like, I wonder if there's anybody in the city that's mad at the Texans. And 713-780-3776, are you mad? What are your initial thoughts on the Texans, the season and all? Like, there was a lot of emotion following that game.
Well, and it's like you and I were talking about going into the weekend. Like how they perform is going to dictate so much of how we feel going into the offseason if they lose. If they get their doors blown off, you're going to feel a certain way. But not that you're going to forget about the entire regular season, but if they played, they were in the game, they played well enough to win, they had opportunities, you might feel totally different about the fact that going into the offseason, they can compete. Like, I felt like the way that their defense played, is such a clear sign that they could have one of the best defenses in the league next year. They do have to upgrade, I think, a couple of positions, but overall, they're so much further advanced than I thought they were defensively. Offensively, we know the offensive line, you got to do whatever you can. But on top of that, I think that we saw that Nico is still really, really good. You did get some contributions from guys I wasn't expecting, but that second receiver position has to be addressed. But I think that overall, there's enough talent on the offensive side of the ball, if you can do something with the offensive line and make a few tweaks here and there, that you can take it up a level to maybe compete more with the best in the NFL. So I think that they're not as far away as I thought they were going into the game, if that makes sense.
How far did you think that, like, what was the difference between Stroud and Mahomes, you think? Because I think that you need a really good quarterback to win in the NFL. You look like at this century's quarterbacks, the only champion, like the only championship-winning quarterback that hasn't been a future Hall of Famer is Nick Foles, like this century. So, like, you need that dude. You need that guy. Like Pat Mahomes, he's in the AFC Championship game. He's going to be a future Hall of Famer. Josh Allen, future Hall of Famer. You look at the NFC, a little bit different. It's hard to call Jaden Daniels a future Hall of Famer, but what a rookie season he's having. Jalen Hurts has been a top 10 quarterback for the last few years. Maybe he's a future Hall of Famer as well. Where do you think the difference is that? Like, where's the divide, the gap between where Mahomes is at as a quarterback and where Stroud is at as a quarterback?
I think it's in a few areas. I think that when you look at in terms of decision making, Mahomes is pretty decisive on what he does and when he hangs on to the football. CJ, I thought, held on to it a little too long in certain circumstances. Again, yesterday, I think poise in the pocket, as much as we say, and we've been complimentary of CJ's ability to move up and slide and do the things that he does. This year was one of those learning curves for him where he also has to understand, like, when is too late to hang on to the football? When do I have to get rid of it? And I thought that CJ kind of evolved in the last couple of weeks in terms of the fact that he doesn't have to be a running quarterback, but if he chooses to run a little bit more often, there's pretty good opportunities for him to really benefit the offense. I think poise in the pocket, decision-making are two of the biggest keys for me with the difference between the two of them, because I think CJ can make all the throws. I don't think that's the issue. I just think, like, that kind of comes with being in total control of the offense like Mahomes is.
Yeah, I think the difference is kind of big. Like, I
how big?
Pretty big. Like, I don't know how to define it. Like, a few feet? Like, I don't know. Like, I feel if we were to put it in football terms and we say that Pat Mahomes is the goal line. Like, where is CJ Stroud to the goal line? The 35 or 40? I feel like it's a pretty big difference. Like, Mahomes' football IQ is on a different level. Like, you send a blitz at Pat Mahomes, he's going to either find the open man or he's going to throw it to where the open man's going to be. Like, there was late in the game, there was one specific play where the Texans brought an extra body. I think they were trying to get a sack to make the field goal a little bit deeper for Butker. I think it was when it was 20-12, and they got that chip shot field goal on 4th-and-1. In fact, it was a 3rd-and-long play because it made it 4th-and-1, and the Chiefs were like, should we go for it? No, you shouldn't. Take a 2-possession lead. But the Texans sent an extra body to try to get the sack. That way, it was a longer field goal, and Mahomes is throwing that ball before he's even in trouble, despite having a rusher that didn't get touched. That's the difference in my mind between Mahomes and Stroud, where Stroud's like, he just a little unsure what he's going to do against the blitz. He doesn't know where the open man is going to be. He, like, we saw a lot of anticipation from him last year. I feel like he regressed in that sense this year. Like, he needs to run the ball more. I thought there were times in the fourth quarter where he was looking to run where he should have looked to run. So, like, the decision-making on that sense. He tried to call a timeout at the 2-minute warning, CJ Stroud did. Don't think Pat Mahomes is going to do that sort of thing.
No,
so, like, I feel like the gap between Mahomes and Stroud is actually greater than we want to believe.
See, I don't think that I'm to the point where I look at anything that CJ still has to get better at and say that he can't eventually get there and he can't be one of the best quarterbacks in the league. Whereas I see quarterbacks around the league where I go, oh, he's not that guy. He's not to the level of having elite quarterback play. You can have really good quarterback play and then have a team around you and still go places in the NFL, but we know who those guys are that just have that elite type talent, and Mahomes obviously is at the top of the list. I think CJ can get there. I think that this year was such a half step back because of the fact that it was a combination. He wasn't used to, and his first season, he didn't have to experience the kind of constant pressure and the breakdowns in his offensive line, the way it kind of reset his internal clock to where that kind of threw everything for a loop.
He had as much time to throw this year as last year, though. Like, that's the thing that, like, confuses me. It's what makes me hesitate with Stroud. It's like, okay, well, the time to throw is almost identical to where it was a year ago.
But it's just, maybe it's from where it's coming from and how it's getting there because of the fact that, and maybe quite simply, it's the fact that when you get to the line of scrimmage and you're not picking up and there's no clear-cut guy that has a firm grasp on how to pick up and read the defense to understand what call should be made. Because we know that that's been a problem all year with the two centers between Patterson and Scruggs. Mm-hmm. And maybe I was thinking about that last night. Maybe instead of all just looking at all the other offensive line positions that we might think about replacing and upgrading, maybe the first one is center.
Because, oh, I've been on that for a while.
Yeah, if you just get yourself a veteran center that can assist with that, that might be a couple of different folds to making the entire offense better.
Yeah, I've been on that for a while because, like, a lot of times people call the tight end like a quarterback's best friend. You give me a veteran center with a young quarterback, a lot of times that's your best friend. So, yeah, I'm cool with that. And, look, I'm not saying that Stroud should be where Mahomes is at. No one's expecting him to be where Mahomes is at currently. But I do think that he has to close the gap in order for the Texans to be a true championship team. And it doesn't necessarily mean that Stroud has to become better than Mahomes, but he has to close the gap to where the rest of the team can be better than the rest of the Kansas City Chiefs. So, yeah, the gap to me seems pretty vast, although I'm not, like, super mad about how the Texans played. I thought it was a winnable game. I thought it really was a winnable game. A few plays go your way, a few stops. I thought it was a winnable game, but in the same breath as I talk from the other side of my mouth, I never felt the Texans were going to win. Like, was there ever a moment in that game where you're like, yeah, Texans are winning this bad boy? I never felt that.
I don't know that I could say definitively I thought they were going to win. I thought that they had a chance to take a lead, and that it would have made it really, really interesting. And the extra point was the first signal where I was like, okay, it's going to be another one of those games where they're going to hang in there, but they're not going to be able to seal the deal. Because other than that, I thought about, for as many mistakes as they had made and you know, shortcomings that had happened for them, that I thought that the way they started the second half, the way they were able to get on another drive, the way they were able to do things where they didn't kind of fold up their tents and go home, I thought, hey, this is going to be really interesting to see how it unfolds. Then they missed the extra point with a chance to tie, and I was like, no, it's still the same old Texans.
The closest I felt to them having a chance to win the game was whenever Mixon ran into the end zone. Whenever Mixon ran into the end zone, that was okay.
Yeah.
I still wasn't like, Texans are going to win, but that was as close as I got to feeling the emotion, Texans are going to win. And then as soon as Fairbairn missed the extra point, that went out the window. And then Kansas City had a touchdown drive, made it an 8-point game. Because, like, the Texans did have an opportunity to take the lead in the first half. Texans never had a chance to take the lead in the second half, ever, unless you would have went for two.
The last chance of optimism I had was when they were down 8, they got the ball back, and I thought, okay, you still have to be able to regroup, look at the scoreboard, and go, it's a one-possession game.
Yeah.
We still legitimately could tie this game, even as bad as missing the extra point was. And then they basically, I don't think it was a 3-and-out, maybe it was, but it was pretty close to where they were. It was a very short drive, and you're like, okay, well, then it looks like the Chiefs are probably going to do what they need to do to solidify.
Oh, it was a 3-and-out, all right, and it was deep in your own territory. Mm-hmm. Like, that, in a lot of ways, lost you the game there. Yeah, the extra point, like, they didn't lose because of the extra point, but I thought it was demoralizing. I thought it did.
Absolutely was.
Because, like, that's what the coaches are telling the team in the locker room, right? We're going to go score. We're going to go pound it down their throat. We're going to get into the end zone. We're going to tie this bad boy up. And then they all do it. They all do it how you drew it up. We're going to tie this game on the first drive, and then we got a new ball game at Arrowhead, second half of the playoffs. It's exactly how they drew it up. And everybody, as soon as Mixon gets into the end zone, is fired up. We just tied this sucker. We just tied this bad boy. We're in this game. Mixed extra point. We're not even tied. So I do think that it had a negative, obviously it had a negative effect in momentum, but I think it was pretty large.
And the emotional swing that the fan base that's followed this team all year went through because of the fact that, you know, a lot of times coming out of the half, they just look like a different team, and they just don't show up, or they're just not, especially against better teams. You're like, are they gonna, what Texas team's going to show up for the second half? Instead, they showed up. They overcame penalties. They went on a hell of a drive. They put themselves in a position to do exactly what D'Amico said he wanted them to do when he went to the break, when a lot of times that doesn't happen. And you're like, yes. And then all of a sudden, no. Right after that, yeah. And you're like, man, you just can't get out of your own way.
And I don't really care about it from the fans' perspective because they're not playing the game. But I think this feel on the sideline is you've worked, like, all you're hearing for 15 minutes is we're going to go down the field and tie this game. We're going to march down the field, tie this game. Then you execute it, and you're at this high, And then you miss this extra point, and all of a sudden you're at this low. And look, the defense bailed them out. Like, the defense kept them in the game, but the offense just couldn't get it going after that. 713-780-ESPN, HR&P listener line. What is your initial feeling after this game? And should we be mad at the Texans? Busy show. We got to talk about Chris Boyd. We got to talk about the decision at right guard. Lamar Jackson losing yesterday in the playoffs. How much blame should he be getting? Mark Andrews also involved there. Mailbag Monday. Got lots to get to. Busy Monday on ESPN 97.5. ESPN 92.5. The number to call, 713-780-ESPN. We're on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN97.5. We're on YouTube at ESPN Houston, on Twitter at ESPN97.5. Blankers at Pac-Man Joel. I'm at Jeremy Branham. Should you be mad at the Texans? 713-780-3776. It's the Bees, ESPN97.5, ESPN92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Joe's in here boasting about how the Bears hired Ben Johnson. You'd think he'd do some work. You know, we're going to have a snow day tomorrow. You'd think he'd be organizing that, getting that all set up. No, he's boasting that the Bears hired Ben Johnson, which, crappy day for the Lions, huh? You lose to the Commanders. Ooh. You might lose both coordinators. This might have been their best chance to win it all. And they lose at home to a rookie quarterback. No, a special rookie quarterback.
There's a reason why tough guy Dan Campbell was in tears after the game, because I think that he can see the writing on the wall, too. That, not that it's been easy for him, but once they got going in the right direction, he had all the right guys in all the right positions, and now there is going to be one hell of an offseason challenge on their hands to try and figure it all out.
I love the NFL. There's just storylines all over the place. 713-780-ESPN. Should we be mad at the Texans? What are your initial thoughts following the defeat? Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Will in Beaumont, you're in the Hive. What's up, Will?
Yes, sir. I don't think we should be mad at the Texans. I think they've been out-strategized. The coaches like Belichick used to let him, he probably wouldn't even make a game plan until the second half of each game. I mean, he just sits there and lets you think he's going to do the same thing and wear your players down, and in the fourth quarter, you don't have a chance. That's why they always just barely win. But they let you, we can't go out and start trying to beat them from the opening play. You can't beat them in four quarters. And you can't wear yourself out the first half, so you don't have a chance in the second half. That's all I got to say.
Appreciate the call, Will.
It was a take. Good luck in Beaumont, by the way. It's going to be pretty rough over there. It's going to be rough everywhere, but Beaumont's going to get it.
Yeah, Lisa was talking about that they did an emergency Zoom with all the people from the station yesterday, and the weather people were saying that normally there's pockets that don't get it, and a lot of times the coast gets free of a lot of the stuff. The meteorologists were saying the entire southern part of the state, all the way across towards Louisiana, everyone's getting it.
Yeah, I've been looking at, like, the snow, the inches of snow predictions and stuff, and, like, the Golden Triangle is, like, it looks to be the apex as of right now, but we'll see. Look, I thought DeMeco had a good scheme against Pat Mahomes. I thought they did a pretty good job. Now, certain things we're going to get to in a little bit that could have been better, but I thought the scheme was okay. I thought Slowick called one of his better games.
Two in a row now.
Yeah, I thought he was fine.
I thought he was good in the Chargers game, and I thought he was good yesterday. What I really liked too was some of the stuff that we're critical of is, like, when do you pull the trigger on a gadget play, especially when you've got a lot of things going momentum wise and timing and rhythm, and then all of a sudden you pull a gadget play out of your back pocket, it fails, it sets you back, and it stalls everything. He faked that. There was a couple where he faked looking like he was going to try a flea flicker or something, a little bit more gadget play, and instead he stayed with what was working, and I didn't really have issues with Bobby like I've had in a lot of games.
Yeah, I didn't. I think it's also important to have the expectation of what your personnel is, because that can hurt you. You know, the 8 sacks, how much of that was Slowick? I think very few.
I believe that it's on CJ in the line, and the line is obviously where everybody's going to start with, and they should, but CJ held onto the ball a little longer than he should have in a couple of those. And he was responsible for a couple too. But yeah, I did not blame Bobby nearly, and was not mad at Bobby the way I had been during certain games during the regular season.
713-780-ESPN, HR&P listener line. A defeat was inevitable. The offensive line was pathetic, was never in it, no chance to win it. It's kind of how I felt that way, but I was also encouraged by the way that, you know, they fought, that they stayed in it. Moral victory Monday, I guess. Now, DeMeco was asked about it after the game. He's like, yeah, I feel discouraged, which is good. Like, I don't want to hear a coach be like, yeah, we're happy that we lost by 8 on the road against Kansas City, or lost by 9 on the road against Kansas City. But yeah, I kind of had both of those feelings. Never felt like they were going to win, But I was also pleased with how they stuck in the game against the back-to-back defending
champs. I was, too, and I wasn't, again, kind of similar to Bobby Slowick, but I understand that the offensive line still had plenty of things that you can point to and say that they were less than. But I felt like that I wasn't harping on it in almost every play. And every time there was a third and long or a third and five or six that I thought, oh, God, he's going to be under such duress, they have little to no chance to get these things completed. But because they came through in so many of those situations, because of the fact that Mechie was better than he was against the Chargers, the fact that Hutchinson was making plays, helping Nico out, who Nico was great, that I felt like, hey, you know what? I'm not sitting there singling out the offensive line over and over again going, yeah, they're really bad. They're just getting exposed. Sure, there were times that they did, but I think credit to the entire offense. I thought that a lot of guys stepped up. That's why I never was thinking that this game was a blowout or out of the realm of them staying in it as a possibility.
713-780-ESPN. Brian's interviewing for an offensive line position on the offensive line coach, offensive line scout. Any position would be an improvement. I don't know if that's what Brian's doing, but 713-780-ESPN, wrong answers only. Texter says, little mad at D'Amico, you're a defensive team and you didn't play that way. Kicking 55-yard tries and going for it on 4th and 10 when your defense is dominant. That's Eric. I felt like he did play to his defense, but I would agree with Eric about that specific play. I thought that was a bad decision to go for it in that spot.
The go for it in the fourth quarter or the go for the field goal?
Go for it in the fourth quarter. The field goal, like I would have kicked it every single time.
You're playing the Chiefs. You got to get every chance you get to have to put points on the board. You have to do that. The fourth quarter play was so late in the clock that if you're hell bent on going for it, then you got to call a timeout there and you've got to set your offense better. But I thought that there was still plenty enough time on the clock. You could have pinned them deep in their own territory. I thought your defense. I would not be critical of their defense at all. They kept you in the game the entire way. I thought they played really, really well, and they fought till the bitter end. I would have trusted my defense there and pinned them back.
Yeah, I will. I thought there was one area of criticism for their defense we'll get to later, but I was pleased with their defense overall. Yeah, that to me was an obvious. You know what? I hate whenever coaches go for it when they're moving backwards. Like in the previous play, they didn't move backwards, but like they had a blitzer right in the face of C.J. Stroud. He had a dump it. I think it was Dare that was in the game. He had a dump it at Dare's feet. Like you just got blown up on a play.
Back to back.
Yeah, and now you're going for it after you got blown up back to back in a fourth down and long. Like remember, a fourth and 10, and you're not moving the ball at all.
The play before that, he had a guy right in his face. He had to throw it before the receiver they just called up and hadn't had a ball thrown to him until yesterday was trying to turn and catch it with one hand to try and salvage something because he was under such pressure. Like, yeah, you're right. Back-to-back plays where you're facing that and it's like fourth and what, six or seven, and you think that that's a good time to go for it? I was not for that.
And yeah, and on top of that, to your point, you're late getting it in. Like, mm-hmm. I hate whenever you don't already have it decided on third down that you're going for on fourth. Like, D'Amico should be in Slowick's here. Hey, you got four downs here. And multiple times this year, including Saturday's game, they have an incompletion or they, you know, have a no gain on a third down. And then it's like, oh, okay, yeah, we're going to go for it here. And then all of a sudden you're late. You're trying to beat the play from having the delay of game, put you in a bad spot. You're rushing on a critical down. So I didn't like that from the and even in that spot, like, take the delay. Like, if you need to save the time out there, which I understand, you're down eight points in the 10 minutes left to play in the fourth quarter. Okay, we don't really like this here. We probably shouldn't go for it in hindsight. Don't snap it. Like, 5 yards from their 40 is not a big deal.
Well, it also makes it easier to punt if that means that you're going to punt them and
maybe
pin them.
I don't know, like, his range, but it could, yeah.
But, well, first of all, he didn't punt very well either. Didn't. But at the same time, most punters will tell you that's why they always take the delay when it's inside the 50 because they feel like it's a little easier to pin it inside the 20 and inside the 10 if they get that little extra room to work with to where then it – you can say the decision was made for us. Look, we're running short on time. We didn't want to burn a timeout there. We did what we had to do. We figured we'd live with the way our defense had played all game if we could just pin them inside their 20.
Yep.
Instead, you look like you've never been there before. You're rushing all over the place. And for the third straight play, he's got guys in his grill, and you're trying to block a guy who's been pretty destructive all day with Dalton Schultz.
Yeah. I know I saw some of your tweets, and he kind of got in your ire a little bit.
He had a couple of good plays.
Yeah, see, I'm torn on that because you're not wrong, right? Like, Dalton Schultz stinks in pass protection, and he does not look like he's a willing blocker at all.
Ever.
He had some big catches, though, yesterday.
He did.
So, like, it's like I kind of want to defend him just for the sake of the argument. Like, you're not really putting a guy in a position to succeed. Like, Dalton Schultz has never been a good blocker, and you're putting him in situations, and I know they've been injured and all this stuff, so maybe they're darned if they do, darned if they don't. But he's not good at that, yet they require him to do that consistently.
And that's what I'm that's where I would put that on the offense, on the play that was called. Because at that point, Dalton Schultz, if nothing else, because he doesn't do a whole lot more for you, is a receiver. That is one of your best receivers on the field yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
So then I don't want him blocking. I want him in a position where he can give you at least another option besides Nico to try and get that critical first down. Instead, he's Olaying guys on defense, and then he's staying in, and he puts CJ behind the eight ball even more.
Yeah, it's kind of it's difficult. Like, it's scheme, though. Like, right? Like, you know that he's not good at that. How can we avoid him doing that? And if you're forced to do it, well, maybe it's not, like, one-on-one against George Karloftis. Maybe he's chipping and then breaking out on a route, stuff like that. So DeMeco going forward on that fourth down was like, really the only spot I would be critical of DeMeco, quite frankly. If I was going to be super critical of Slowick, I didn't love that he completely abandoned the run game when they were down by eight.
Mixon was really good all day.
He was really good, and then whenever they got down by eight, he acted like they were down by two possessions and they had to go hurry up. And it's like, hey, you don't need to go hurry up here. You just need a long, sustained touchdown drive, much like the first one.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like he got too quick into the hurry up when all out passing.
I totally agree with that, because I was notating throughout the game and watching it both times, going, boy, Mixon found a lot of times where he made something out of nothing. But he got it in the pass game. He was really good getting to the edge. He was finding holes and getting extra yards. So I was really pleased with Joe. And now that you brought that up, thinking back on it, yeah, they did completely abandon the run when they went down eight, and they didn't have to do that because Kansas City had a hell of a time trying to stop them running the football all day.
Yeah, I was a little disappointed that they did that. 713-780-ESPN. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Jera, you're in the Hive. What's up, Jera?
Hey guys, I want to say I think the Texans had a good season. You know, they beat Harbaugh, they beat a good Chargers team. Las Vegas favored the Chargers, so they proved Vegas wrong there. And you know, we've been talking about the offensive line all year long, and you'll tell me what picks the Texans have in the upcoming draft. But I'd be interested to hear if you can handicap, you know, who are kind of the good offensive linemen in the upcoming draft. Thanks, guys. Hang up and listen. Bye.
Knock
appreciate
it out,
Blakers. No, that's okay. Appreciate you listening, Jerry. Look, here's the thing that I would throw back on you before we even get into that level of draft and how this team gets better, if that's the way you're trying to do it. Is Nick Caserio, as good as he is at drafting other positions, is Nick Caserio and his staff good at drafting offensive linemen? Because if they're not, then maybe that they should be looking at free agency instead, and they should be looking for guys that are on the market, because a lot of times those are the guys that kind of teams are willing to move on from, the veteran, experienced offensive linemen, to where you look at and say, like Jeremy said, like I brought up today, maybe you look at a veteran center to start the entire process going in the right direction. That's a more than capable veteran that's proven it, that can help CJ to read the defenses and get everybody into the play quicker. And then worry about the fact that you might have to shuffle some pieces. You can get rid of some guys. You can do some things and not necessarily have to do it all through the draft.
Yeah, see, I'm not a proponent of drafting linemen. I feel like Caserio, like maybe Blake Fisher's changing the narrative a little bit. I know he didn't have a good game Saturday, but he was going up against some pretty good players. I don't want him to draft guys, though. Like, I want veterans. I want guys who can come in here and, like, they're not projects. They're not, hey, we need to get this ceiling out of them and this upside. No, I want ready-made, turnkey offensive linemen because I don't want to waste all of C.J. Stroud's rookie contract. So I'm with you on that. And what they do with this offensive line is going to be fascinating, because I could see them going into next season with only one new offensive lineman. Like, it wouldn't shock me if Laramie's back. It wouldn't shock me if Titus is on the starting lineup. It wouldn't shock me, obviously, if Laramie's here, he's starting. If Titus is here, he's starting. Juice Scruggs could potentially be a starter. Blake Fisher could potentially be a starter. Maybe Jarrett Patterson. I doubt that one a little bit. But you might already have four of your five starters for next year. Or maybe you just go complete upheaval and you don't bring back, you know, any of them. Now, I do think Laramie will be back, but maybe it's only Laramie. Juice is a backup. Jarrett Patterson's a backup, and you have four new offensive linemen. So what they decide to do with their players is going to be interesting. Like, I don't know if they're going to have one new starter. I don't know if they're going to have four new starters.
If I'm betting, they're going to have more than one starter on the new starter on the offensive line. And I don't know what they're going to do with
Howard. They're not in great cap situation.
But Shaq looked like...
I think Shaq's toast. But he's also up. Like, he doesn't have a deal.
I thought they extended it.
No, I think he's done. I think he was a two-year deal when they traded for him.
I thought that they extended it this year. I hope I'm wrong, because I was thinking he had to come back. But Shaq's got... I think he's got to go. I think he's done. I think that you have to figure something out at center. I think that, you know, those two guys in Patterson and Scruggs have depth, and they add depth with their versatility. I'm not sure either one of them should be a starter for you on this line. And then the big question is going to be, what are you going to do with Howard? Because you can get out from Howard, but you made him, you overpaid him, and then you overpaid him at a position he's hardly played because of the fact that you've been juggling offensive linemen. Do you really firmly believe in your heart of hearts that he can go back to right tackle? And if he does, then does Fisher have to learn how to play another position, or is Fisher just going to be a backup?
If Fisher and Titus Howard are both starting on the same offensive line, Fisher's your right tackle and Titus is your left guard. And I think that there's a possibility they go into next season with that.
Yeah,
I think they could go into next season with Laramie at left tackle, Titus at left guard, Juice at right guard, Fisher at right tackle, and you sign a center. I think they could do that next year.
I'm okay with that.
It's only one, it's only one new offensive lineman.
As long as Fisher develops, continues to develop, I could live with that. I think that a center, I would be really, really good, because I think that could actually help you twofold. It helps you with CJ. It helps you with the line. But then... I think that Howard's okay, but you're just paying him an exorbitant amount of money to be a left guard.
Yeah, you're right, but the cap savings might not be enough to sign a capable starting lineup, a starting left guard. Because like, you only save if you cut him, like, I think it's like $12 million if you do it post June 1st. Is that enough money to give you an upgrade at left guard? It might not be. So like, that's going to be the difficulty of Nick Caserio, because like, it makes sense to move on for him because he is overpaid. But the cap savings of moving on from him, is there enough of an upgrade out there that you can get on the cap savings? I don't think so.
Yeah, that's
so that. it's you're in a bad spot. And it's really because of a bad contract that you gave him. You were right, you kind of right about Mason. Whenever they traded for him, they gave him a 3-year deal. So they haven't redone it since they traded him, but they gave him a 3-year deal when they traded for him. So next year he is on the books for a cap number of $15 million, $14.5 million, but they can get out of it,
okay. But
the cap savings isn't fantastic. Like, it would save you $2 million if you got rid of them. If you do it post June 1st, it's 9.5, but you can only get one of those. Yeah, so I think that's one you can get out of, but it might maybe be a restructure. I don't know.
Yeah,
we'll see.
I think
it's
Nick
tough.
Likes him, and with that Patriot,
I mean, they started him.
Yeah.
They started him.
Well, that's a whole conversation right there.
Yeah. 713-780-ESP. We'll continue to get your thoughts. Let's have that conversation. What did you make of the whole Shaq Mason, Juice Scruggs, right guard situation? We'll get to the officials. And then also, are you buying this Chris Boyd story? It is the B, 713-780-ESPN on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
713-780-ESPN. Who's this? What's this weather guy's name? Jim Cantor? Is it Cantor or Cantor? I don't know. I don't watch the weather channel. I'm not 80. Is Cantori?
I think so.
He's in Houston.
Oh, really?
He's in Houston ahead of the winter storm. Y'all stay safe out there.
Well, he won't have to be hanging on for dear life when the winds are blowing him all over the place and hanging on to a stop sign.
No. I wonder where he's going to camp out at.
I would say closer to the coast, maybe.
Yeah, maybe. Wherever they think he's going to get the most.
Right.
Although Houston's like the biggest city. I don't know. Yeah. A lot of people are criticizing Houston for not having a snowplow, but I kind of get it. Like, I can understand
I'm impressed that they have, not that we grew up with salt trucks in the Midwest, but the fact that they have the trucks with the chemicals and were able to pre-treat the overpasses and stuff yesterday, which I didn't think that they had.
Like, how much does a snowplow cost, you think? Like, $100,000?
At least.
Like, you use it once every 20 years. Why would you buy one?
Right.
I don't think it's practical. I think it's good budgeting. Maybe the first time anybody's ever said that about the city, or any city. 713-780-ESPN. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Lamont, you're in the Hive. What's up, Lamont?
Hey, can y'all hear me?
Yeah, go ahead, man. We got you.
Yeah. I know a lot of people is not going to want to hear this, but D'Amico got our coach yesterday. You know, it just really boggles my mind how nonchalant this team is. When the game is on the line, man, y'all ass is on the line right now. We can't say ass, right?
No,
Well, you just did. You're fine.
Yeah, you can say that. That's fine.
All right. All right. But the team in the fourth quarter was like all, you know, lackadaisical, walking around with 10 minutes left. I don't get it. DeVito got our coach. It was a couple of things. And I know with this show, you guys are going to hit on it. I know Jeremy's going to hit on it. Another thing, I will not stay in the Texans as long as Bobby Slowik is the coach of that offense. That dude is trash. I know everybody was giving them props from yesterday, but I'm not looking at yesterday. I'm looking at all of the stuff that happens, the cumulative from everything that happens up until this point. And another thing, wait, man, is it me or should an OC be in the booth? The OC be in the booth up top in the Iron Sky, looking down at the field. How can he even see? How can he even see things going on at field level? I don't get that. And my last thing, this team is not disciplined, man. This team is not disciplined. And I know that you guys are going to get into the whole boy thing and stuff like that. And I know they're trying to, do some PR and all of that type of crap. But I knew not the scene. They look like that was anger right there. And not to even mention the fact, dude, if you thought that was a fumble, your ass wasn't still there trying to recover the ball. That's all I have,
fella. And I'm out. Appreciate it, Lamont. Look, there's a lot to uncover there. If you're out coached by Andy Reid, who's maybe one of the greatest coaches in the history of the game, I mean, a lot of worse things could happen. I think that some of your other points are valid. I think that from the standpoint of, you talk about body of work. I understand, and I know Lamont's been extremely critical of Bobby Slowik, but I've said all along that when you get a first-time offensive coordinator, no matter what kind of success they had in year one, there's going to be times where he's probably going to have some pitfalls, and he had quite a few pitfalls this season. As it relates to the effort in the fourth quarter and I think you said lackadaisical, I'm not sure that they were lackadaisical, but that's where I would say, to your point about they went away from the run, they still had plenty of time on the clock, they kind of went away from the offense that had been working, that you knew that Kansas City was struggling to stop. So I would say you're probably onto something there. But overall, when you look at the big picture, like the Boyd situation, and we'll get into it even further, I think that there is something about the discipline there. I think that when we talked about penalties earlier in the year, I think there's something there. I think that when you look at the totality, again, of the season, it's easy to just look at what happened that we just got done dealing with Saturday. But when you look at the totality of the entire season, that's when a lot has to be kind of compressed into, hey, I'm not gonna just compartmentalize what happened on Saturday. But Bobby didn't have his best season. We know that. DeMeco probably didn't have his best season. We know that. The offensive line goes without saying. But from the standpoint of discipline, I do think that there's something internally that needs to be fixed and changed for next season.
Yeah, I'll defer to DeMeco when it comes to Slowik. If he wants to move on, I get it. If he wants to keep him, I get it. The outcoached aspect of it, I do not agree that DeMeco was outcoached by Andy. Texans outgained them by 125 yards. In fact, the Texans are the first team in NFL history to outgain their opponent and have zero turnovers in a playoff game and lose. Outgain them by 100 yards. Teams that had done that in the history of the NFL were 49-0. Until the Texans, but you look at special teams, you look at penalties. I will give you the discipline thing, though. The Texans were top five in penalties last year, they're top five in penalties this year, and I understand how, like, if you want to be an aggressive team, you want to be a physical team, you want to be a swarming team, that you're going to have penalties and you might be in the top half of the league, but there's a lot of the procedural ones that are very easy to avoid. Like, if you get a late hit every now and then, like the one on Will Anderson when he hit Mahomes, okay, like you want to be a physical team, that's going to happen from time to time. The Henry Toho Toho one where Mahomes is flopping late and he hits him, it didn't even hit him really. I can understand picking up those type of penalties because you want to be the physical team that hits hard and swarms all over the field. But the false starts, the illegal procedures, two guys shifting at the same time, lining up off sides, holding on special teams, like those are the ones I cannot live with. I can live with a team being aggressive and being penalized a little bit on that front. But the easy, like, you know, mental stuff is the ones that frustrate me.
Yeah, I think, too, when you look at it, Jeremy, it's when they occur. Like, they occur a lot of times when you're in the red zone, and all of a sudden your chances for a touchdown are greatly diminished because now you're at first and 20, or you're set further behind the chains because of when they happened. In the Chargers game, they were lucky that their defense played as well as they did and wreaked as much havoc as it did on the entire game because there were way too many times that penalties pushed them out of getting touchdowns and in some cases pushed them out of getting points. That has to be factored in. To your point, early in the season, the one that I was harping on where I thought it was a disciplinary issue as well, they let Tunsil just get away with the one game where I think he had 8 penalties all by himself, and it was a combination of false starts and then the illegal procedures lined up in the wrong position. And it was just like, you know, we'll address it. We'll address it internally. And Laramie just came out and said, you know, it's not just me. It's more about the communication amongst the offensive line where I started going, okay, well, someone's got to put a foot in somebody's rear end and just decide, hey, we can't have this.
To be fair, Laramie didn't get penalized much after that.
The line struggled with it for a couple of weeks. And I think that overall, in looking at it, it did make me question, and we had a conversation, at least one on this show, about how much do I think personally that DeMeco is really, you know, getting cracking down on them and what he's doing. We don't know because we're not there, but it started to become an issue. And then, like you said, the penalties
were... It improved.
I think, but the line didn't.
That's not true. The offensive line was less penalized than their peak of the year.
I'm just saying their overall performance, though, because we were talking about how it relates to their...
We were talking about discipline and penalized.
But also from the offensive line, whether it's the offensive line coach or anything, because Laramie was blaming it on continuity and communication and all these other things. And then you talk about the penalties and you talk about this. This isn't Boyd's first rodeo either. I mean, he's had a lot of these kind of brain fart situations to where you're going, I don't know, but I hope that internally this is the light going on. We've got to fix a lot of this before next season because this can't continue to happen.
Yeah, I would like them to clean up the silly stuff, the mental stuff, the line up right, don't have multiple guys in motion, don't hold on kick return, don't throw your helmet when you're on the field. Because are you buying the Chris Boyd story?
I'm not.
For what it's worth?
I'm not.
I do think he was celebrating. I think he was celebrating.
Okay, but I think it's before that. I think regardless of what happens with Frank Ross, I think the bigger issue is every guy in this league knows while you're on the field between those white lines, you don't take your helmet off and you don't throw it on the field. And so regardless of whether you are going to give me your excuse that you thought that you had created the turnover, and I agree with Lamont, if you thought you created the turnover, we'll stay on the field until you verify that you got the ball. Don't turn around and assume it. Throw your helmet first, which is a complete boneheaded decision. And then go and decide and shove your coach. I think the biggest thing for me there is the fact that regardless of whether you believe or don't believe he pushed Frank Ross in celebration and not anger, you don't take your helmet off on the field and you don't throw it.
Yeah, I am buying the story because he was the one that caused the fumble. You see him like run off the field and he's like kind of like putting his hands out like this, like, yay! And then you see him throw his helmet off. So I do think that he was celebrating. I agree with you that you can never throw off your helmet in the middle of a football field, whether you're angry or whether you're happy. That's boneheaded. It's going to cost your team 15 yards, whether you're costing your offense 15 yards or you're costing your defense 15 yards. I'm not even sure he cost them 15 yards because I think it was half a distance to the goal because the special teams let him run all the way down the field. So I do agree that you can't have that. I do agree that a player needs to know better. I do agree that that stuff needs to be coached up, which I give them the benefit of the doubt that it is being coached up, but then you could counterpoint me and say, well, why are the penalties so high? Which would be a really good counterpoint. So while I do believe Chris Boyd was celebrating and happy for causing the fumble, and he said he thought that they recovered, you can never excuse taking your helmet off on the field and throwing it.
It's like, that shouldn't even be an unwritten rule in the NFL, because you know the same thing in college football. If your helmet comes off in college, you got to sit out a play. So you know that you have to try and keep your headgear on. But overall, the NFL, everybody knows that's just something you don't do, and you do it in a playoff game.
Yeah, it was not smart. Now, the defense bailed him out. He kind of got away with it, because even if he doesn't throw his helmet there, they're probably going to get a field goal anyways. Mm-hmm. So like, it didn't cost them on the scoreboard.
Right.
It cost them a lot, like, nationally, because people were just crushing him. And I was included in that. I thought that he was angry, and I thought he was pushing Frank Ross because Frank Ross was getting on to him. In hindsight, I recant, because I do think that he was celebrating. What'd you think of the referees in this game?
Look, we're highly critical of people that point to the officials and foremost all the time. We have specific people that we know do it all the time, and it's not a good look. And I knew the numbers, and we talked about the fact that, you know, that this was a guy that was considered to be, it was a Clay Martin, is considered to be you know, the Scott, they were bringing out stats like he was the Scott Foster of the NFL as it relates to the Chiefs.
He's 6-0 when he white hats Chiefs games.
I think 7-0 now.
It is 7-0 now. So, yeah.
So now, so I was going in, going, I don't want to consider that narrative. This is a playoff game. I don't want to factor that in. But after watching what I saw, and the fact that what I kept screaming about was, and they even addressed it on the telecast at one point, is if we're going to go to replay assist. And if the league is going to get involved in these plays so that they can further help get the calls right, and they chose not to on both of them, I even tweeted about the fact that Mahomes doing his Luis Scola on the sideline and doing all that, and he almost got another one in the second half, to where I was like, okay, but the two hits themselves on Mahomes, especially when Clay Martin said after the game, he clearly was sliding when hit by the two Texans players. Clearly is the biggest bunch of BS I've ever heard in my life. And the fact that if replay assist is involved, I understand in the first one, they're making the case that if face masks touch, that constitutes a blow to the head, no matter how hard or not hard it was. And so that's maybe why they didn't get involved there. How can you not get involved in the second one and say, you just don't make that call there. There was two. I don't think he slid nearly in time, and I think that was such a critical. Just don't call that.
Yeah, this goes back to the Jacksonville deal. Like, I just hate the way that this is officiated league wide, and it's hard to find consistency with it too. Like, one crew would call it one way, another crew would call it a different way. Mahomes is like kind of the face of the NFL, so I do think he gets protected more than others. You had Wald Anderson, who's the former NFL official, who went on NFL Network. Was like, they called it right based on how based on how the way the rule is written. So I just hate the way the rule is written. Like, going back to the Jacksonville thing again. Now, I don't think it's the reason the Texans lost this game.
No,
it's close.
They did enough to shoot themselves in the foot, special teams and otherwise, to where they created their own loss in a lot of ways. But they did get three off the first one. On Mahomes.
Oh, no doubt, because that would have ended the drive.
Yeah, it would. And the second one, I think they were going to end up stopping that drive as well, and he was clearly a runner. You're right, the rule has to change, but the bigger point that you just brought up is the one that I was harping on as well. You watch the other three games, you watch the amount, and especially the game last night, which arguably was the biggest game of the weekend, there were three or four plays where tackles were made almost off the white and by the bench that the referees just went, okay, get the ball back in, let's play. Yeah.
Those are tough too, though, because like, you start the tackle whenever the guy's out of bounds, and then it continues into the out of bounds. Like the one on Ed Oliver, where everybody was critical of, like I think it was Ed Oliver, where he brought down Lamar Jackson.
Is he 91?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It started in bounds. So like, that's very tough for a defender. Like, you start to tackle the guy while he's in bounds. The play continues out of bounds. What do you want him to do? Like, just pull off? Like, stop holding him as you're trying to bring a guy down? That's tough.
There was the blow that Goff took after the pick. That
was a big hit.
Yeah, there was one on Jaden Daniels, I think it was, when he was getting out of bounds. There were several last night in the Philly Rams game. And I understand with snow in it, you might be a little bit more lenient in terms of trying to stop yourself. But there, in every game, there was a couple of plays where I went, well, if that's 15, there's a hanky and a 15-yard penalty, and there is no doubt in anybody's mind that he's getting that call. And I think that's BS.
Yeah. No, it's not consistently called. I have more issue with the way that it's called across the league than, like, that's those specific plays in the game. Now, I was heated in the game. And I also don't blame Mahomes for flopping. Like, if they're going to call it, why wouldn't you flop? Like, I wish C.J. Stroud would flop more. If you can get, like, if you can fake a hit and all of a sudden it means that your offense stays on the field, that's a heads-up play. That's gamesmanship.
Rockets fans don't want to hear this, but this is essentially James Harden knowing what he could get away with because of the way the rules were.
Yeah.
And just doing all the different things he did to manipulate the Euro step and the traveling calls and the drawing of the fouls and all the things that he did for years and years and years. If you're Patrick Mahomes and you know, hey, all I got to do is flail around a little bit and there's going to be and the officials are going to panic, why not give your team an extra 15 if you can get it?
Yeah, if it's the difference between you keeping your offense on and off the field, I want my quarterback to flop if they're going to fall for it. I want to win. I want to win, and if it means that my quarterback's, like, embellishing a hit, because I thought there were times whenever Stroud did get hit, like, after he threw the ball, but not, like, violently, where maybe if he flops that he could have picked up the call. So, but I don't blame Mahomes, quite frankly.
But also, Jeremy, your point on consistency. I want consistency across the league. I want consistency within that refereeing group yesterday. Because if you go back and watch that game again, and you see that Justin Reed a couple times clearly went helmet to helmet on receivers over the middle, and they didn't even think about it. And there was one where, well, I don't think it was Reed, it was somebody else. The safety came up on a crossing receiver that was diving for the Texans. And it was ear hole to textbook.
Yeah, he was down, right? That was when he was down.
And he was coming down. He was on his way down. And the defensive back for the Chiefs clearly went right into the side of his helmet and ear hole. And they weren't even thinking about that. But if that's Patrick Mahomes, well, that's 15 no matter what.
You see why I like to hit, guys? You see why I like violence.
The minute
in football?
That I saw these ear hole shots and stuff like that, and even the penalties, and I'm like, is this what you want?
Yeah, look, I don't want them to ear hole guys, but if you're going to sit there and flop around, hit them. Hit them. Like, I'm not saying hit them in the face, Matt. Hit them, though. Hit them in the chest.
I think the bigger problem was that after the game in the postgame comments, that everybody to a man in that locker room said, we already knew what we were set up for. That should not be the case. There should not even be the thought of the fact that a certain referee crew is going to call a game a certain way to where we might be more behind the eight ball and we have to be hyper careful about touching Mahomes at any time.
Do you mean like they shouldn't have that attitude or like from a referee perspective that should not
from
be the narrative?
From a referee perspective, okay. That's the narrative you don't want for your crew.
I agree with that. I saw a lot of people saying that the Texans already lost because it was them against the world.
Because you know I hate the Scott Foster stuff.
Well, I also think them versus the world is like a good mentality to have when you go on the road.
Oh,
like,
sure.
You know, so like I saw a lot of people being critical of the Texans for like having that mentality. Like it's against the world, including the refs. No, I think you need that on the road.
No, I think that to me, it would be more or less that the fact that they did enough research in their homework and they knew how the referees have called their games to understand, hey, we're going to tell our players and overemphasize if we have to, don't touch them on the sidelines. Don't, you know, if there's a, and it's so hard as a defensive player, but the two roughings, I disagree with because you can't ease up there.
Yeah.
The fact that when the two guys went helmet to helmet, toe to toe, and everything, there's nothing you can do there.
Yeah, I hate how it's officiated, and I hate how the rules drawn up. All right, 713-780-ESPN. We'll get to you, Rudy, Jesse, on the other side. Also, where did the Texans lose this game? 713-780-3776. It's the Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.